Jason, this was really, 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 really bad. We'll talk about the Bears' loss to the Lions coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, he's Jason Leisure. I'm Patrick Finley. Jason, the Bears gave up 52 whole points to the Lions in a 52-21 loss that, at least in the second half, didn't even feel that close. Ben Johnson's return to Detroit was met with curse words, I guess, from some fans, and an absolute shooing from his boss, Dan Campbell. I feel silly asking whether the Bears were beyond this, but were the Bears beyond this?
I guess I've seen worse here. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, they lost 41-10 in Ford Field a couple of years ago. They had the Thanksgiving debacle last year. I don't know, man.
They had to kick a field goal at the buzzer to beat a winless team on the week that Matt Nagy was pre-fired. Remember that?
2021, yeah. There is really nothing good here. And really, the game wasn't even as close as it sounds, which is a weird thing to say when it's 52-21 because that doesn't sound close.
And also when it was a seven-point game with 5 seconds left in the first half.
But the Lions could have had however many points. They probably could have had another 14 if they had left their starters in, because they were just getting everything they wanted. They had 500 plus yards of offense today. They had 8.8 yards per play. There's very little that you can point to on either side of the ball that was good for the Bears. Wrong everywhere on Sunday in Detroit, basically. No pass rush, no run stopping. Tons of lapses in the secondary. It just seemed like guys were running all over the place. It looked like some OTAs type 7-on-7 practices with the way Detroit's skill players were just running open all over the place. And on the other side, in the offense, I mean, Caleb Williams gives you a game that is basically the type of game that got Justin Fields booted.
Right.
I mean, there just isn't much here that you like for the Bears on either side of the ball. And you're asking more of a big picture question of, should they be past this? Should this be better? Yeah, it should be. There is definitely going to be an acclimation process with a new coaching staff, not just Ben Johnson, but also Dennis Allen and some new players trying to get together and get on the same page. So I've looked at this all along, Patrick. Let's just say specifically with Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson. This is the same thing I said last week when we recorded this. It should look right. It should start to click by about midseason. That's a reasonable expectation. It shouldn't look this bad in between. Caleb Williams is making mistakes that are the first cracks, I think, little bit of doubt that is getting in the picture for him, because some of the mistakes he's making with inaccuracies and the bad decision he made on the interception today, this can't be what Ben Johnson thought he was getting. And I wonder how much Ben Johnson is going to tolerate.
I don't think he'll tolerate much of it. You know, today, I was surprised post-game today when he said, listen, I've been part of butt kickings like this. Before this happens in the league, we're in week two, I'm not concerned.
This doesn't happen in the league. This doesn't.
You and I talked about this.
I mean, it happens, but it's pretty rare that you lose by 31, and it could have been worse. Most of these games are 4-point games in the final couple of minutes, Pat.
The Bears in the Super Bowl era have given up more than 52 points three times, Jason. Twice when they gave up 55 to the Packers in 2014 and then to the Lions in 97. And I believe they gave up 54 to the Eagles in 2013. So giving up that many points doesn't happen every once in a while.
Every week you look through the scores and you see somebody loses 52-21.
The Lions' offense was averaging, before they pulled their starters, 11.9 yards per play. That's a first down. And a fifth.
Yeah.
Every play. That's unacceptable. And in a sense, and you and I talked about this during the game when we could hear ourselves speak.
It was loud. It's always loud here.
The defense doing what the defense did, big picture, concerns me as much as the offense, if not more. And it's because I had expectations for this defense. And it's because if the Bears were going to win games in the short term while they tried to wait for this offense to click, it was going to be because the defense played, quite honestly, the way it did last week, which was flashes of dominance, a nose for the ball, and then you just hope you don't melt down at the end. Boy, that was not the case today. They hung in there for about a quarter and a half. They made up for a couple of offensive mistakes, and then they let go of the rope. And that coincided with Jalen Johnson and TJ Edwards both getting hurt. Very, very concerning when you consider that Jalen had missed, I don't know, 6 weeks with a groin injury. Returns to game action today and hurts his groin. TJ Edwards had missed 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, 4 weeks with a hamstring. Returns to game action today, leaves with a hamstring. Those are long-term sounding injuries that, boy, if you take two of the Bears' best, what, four defensive players off the field for a long time, that's going to be trouble.
Defensively, if you just have to say good or bad, week one was a bad game. I mean, J.J. McCarthy in his NFL debut won NFC Player of the Week against you, and you let an 11-point lead in the fourth quarter turn into you being down 10, and you were giving up 6.3 yards per carry in the fourth quarter. That's not a good game.
That's just as bad, really, as the offense
that in week one when you're saying, well, it started out really great, and then it fell apart. The same for the defense. I don't look at that as a good game, and certainly in Detroit, week two, worse. And I totally agree with you that I didn't think there was going to be such a learning curve defensively. And now the offense still has all this potential, if you still believe in that after these first 2 weeks. But the offense still has all of this potential. I don't see that on the defensive side. I see a talent issue on the defensive side. And as you mentioned, Patrick, with the injuries, a talent issue that becomes even more of an issue because key people are now out and you don't know when you're going to get them back.
And because they used so much of their draft capital the last 2 years on offense with Caleb Williams, Jalen Johnson, Ozzie Trapillo, Colston Loveland, Luther Burden, Karan Amagaji. I miss any first.
Rome. Did you say Rome?
Yep. Those are all picks in the first, second, or third round. Because of that, they don't have these developmental guys on defense. They have Shamar Turner, who was their last of three second-round picks this year. He was a healthy scratch today, Jason. When you look at the starting lineup right now, who's going to get better as a function of just regular growth? Dio Odengbo? Maybe? Is that it?
Maybe.
We know who Byard is. We know who Brisker is. We know who Jalen is. We know who Tyreek is, for better or worse, and Tyreek had a terrible day. Today, the linebackers are vets. Montez Sweat's a vet. Grady Jarrett's old. I say that lovingly, but he's old. I mean, we know what this defense is, and if this is what they're going to put on the field, boy, that's concerning to me.
It's really concerning that corner looks as bad as it does right now, because you would have said at any point last year or this year that is their deepest, strongest position. It doesn't look like that right now. Nope. It doesn't look like even with Jalen Johnson out there, who's the number two corner out here?
The right answer is it's Kyler Gordon.
When Kyler Gordon comes back, does he have to play on the outside? Because now you have so many failures by Tyreek Stevenson and Nashawn Wright that's not as solid as you thought it was. When you talk about you mentioned their draft class for this year. It hasn't helped at all yet.
Nope.
And they're only two games in. But Colston Loveland and Luther Burden are not involved in the offense. And Ozzie Trapillo's not playing, not even dressing in week two, and along with Shamar Turner being totally a non-factor and not even dressing for week two. It's only two games, but, when you draft guys in the first and second round, you're assuming that they're going to be immediate starters. And the fact that you have two second-round picks that are not even suitable to be playing out there, in your opinion, in the coaching staff's opinion, that is not good.
No, it's not. And the fact that they are Ozzie Trapillo didn't dress today, so Theo Benedet, an undrafted Canadian from a year ago, could dress. That's alarming. You know, when you look at the defensive tackles that the Bears have, they're very deep at that position. But the fact that Shamar Turner can't beat out, any of them, Chris Williams,
Think about the positions you didn't address. And we said this at the time. This is not revisionist history. Think about the positions you didn't address while you were spending the number 10 pick on a tight end and then a second-round pick on a wide receiver and then waiting till the second round to take care of needs at defensive line and left tackle. I mean, everybody thought it's going to be offensive line or defensive line with that number 10 pick. And you're thinking, you know, if you get on that early, maybe you're drafting a running back higher instead of right now having DeAndre Swift, and that's it.
Along the lines of...
He had a good game, by the way.
Yeah, along the lines of line play, real quick, a couple of game scenarios before the game got completely out of control I think are worth rehashing. One of them is Ben Johnson calling a quarterback sneak on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1, in which Caleb Williams couldn't get it either time.
They had a conversation after that.
He's running behind the middle of an offensive line that has Drew Dahlman, the highest-paid center in free agency this year. And Joe Tooney, who might be a Hall of Famer, and Jonah Jackson.
I
have a mental block on his first name for some reason, Jason. And they give up, they make trades for these guys and then give them money.
It's like $150 million in the middle of that line.
And they get shoved back, and Ben says after the game, well, you know, the Packers had a hard time in short yardage against them too. That's not an excuse, Jason. They need to be able to get that, you know, Caleb Williams will tell us all day that he's 230 pounds, but he's not my ideal a ball carrier going up the middle there.
Maybe start practicing the tush push. Might be a good idea for those situations. Caleb Williams went, there was just 3rd-and-1 at their own 37. He goes to the right side on 3rd-and-1 and sneak, doesn't get it, but gets something. Then he goes to the left side on 4th-and-1 and doesn't get it. And he thinks he got it, but the review and everything tells you that he didn't. The conversation him and Ben Johnson had on the sideline afterwards was Ben Johnson telling him probably should have gone to the right because it worked better on the first down. That was where they were making more headway.
Speaking of review, there's a really goofy situation at the end of the first half.
Really weird. Was it as weird as it looked in real time, or is there a simpler explanation for this?
I think there's a simpler explanation, but that's a very, very low bar to clear because it was pretty confusing in the wake of, or at least during halftime. Long story short, by the way, do we call him Tesla? Tesla?
Tesla is the wide receiver. Isaac Tesla is the receiver.
A name I've never seen ever in my life. Have you ever seen T-E capital S-L-A-A?
I had not. I was not familiar with that name until I saw him make an incredible catch week 1 in Green Bay.
So the Lions are moving without a timeout. They throw a ball up the sideline to Isaac Tesla, who's got Tyreek Stevenson nominally covering him, I guess. He dives, catches the ball, appears to land inbounds, and then kind of rolls out of bounds. The clock runs. The Lions aren't really sure that it is running, so they don't hustle to the line of scrimmage. And from the time he caught the ball at 16 seconds until the Lions went to get the snap off to spike the ball, the clock runs out. The Bears start jogging off the field.
So it appears to be timeout. Time ran out. It's halftime. They couldn't spike the ball at the 4.
Right, whatever. And the Bears are now down 7 going into halftime in which they will get the ball to start the third
quarter. Bears have cleared the sideline already at this point, headed to the locker room.
And then everybody gets waved back, and here's why. Replay showed that he landed in bounds, but the fact that they went to replay automatically meant that they needed to run time off the clock. And because they needed to run time off the clock, they had to run 10 seconds from the moment of the catch. So that gets us from 16 seconds to 6 seconds. And it also gives the Lions a chance to line up and run a play. Maybe two, by the way. So everybody hustles back on the field. The Lions line up. And Jason, I would have bet every dollar I had in my pocket that the Lions were going to score a touchdown on that play. And they do. Afterwards, Ben Johnson said that it was explained to him kind of at the end of the third quarter. You know, he said that the official next to him said, all right, it's halftime, and that's why they started running off. You know, but just a weird string of events. As it turns out, doesn't much matter. But if the Bears had hung around for even a little bit, it would have been a pretty big turning point in the game. It was, a 7-point swing.
They were down. Bears were down 7 prior to that and were getting the ball back coming out of halftime.
Yeah, and instead they were down 14. I believe went 3-and-out to start the third quarter and then gave up a touchdown. So not good. Jason, we were all a little confused by it, but my takeaway was that whether he would have been ruled out of bounds after the catch or not, they were going to run that 10 seconds off either way.
Yeah, it's a glitch in the rules because that doesn't seem fair. That doesn't make sense that Detroit would be penalized 10. Any team in that situation, in Detroit's situation, would be penalized the 10 seconds an official review that they didn't call for.
Can we do a role-playing exercise?
Sure. Yes. Okay.
I'll be Ben Johnson.
Yes, and.
Okay. You'll be somebody asking what it's like to be a head coach. Go ahead.
Well, what's it like being a head coach?
Well, in my first game, I told my kicker to kick the ball out of bounds because there was a goofy situation nobody had ever really been through before. And as it turned out, he could have just tapped the ball a foot in the air and the clock would have stopped. But really, that was kind of confusing to everybody because how often are you in that situation?
Well, that's confusing. What about the second game?
The second game, we were going to halftime, and as it turns out, it's not halftime, and then we gave up 7 points. Those are two very bizarre situations. I was trying to think of something similar. I got to John Fox challenging a play against the Packers in which what he thought was a Bears touchdown turned into a fumble out the back of the end zone. Do you remember that? And the Packers got the ball.
No, I wasn't here for that.
They had a running back dive at the pylon, and John thought they put him down at the one. John thought it was a touchdown, so he challenges. And as it turns out, he had fumbled the ball out of bounds, and they gave the Packers the ball for 20 coming out. But these are it's on one hand, you're the head coach. This is, you know, stuff happens sometimes. But, boy, you think Ben would just like a kind of a normal game?
I think that he would love a game where his team looks right. And that just hasn't happened in these first two games. And I don't think it can be understated what this must have been like for him Sunday to come back to Ford Field and not be riding high at all. I mean, I know he went in confident, but to be booed the whole time, to have the crowd at the end, to have it be so laughable at the end that you are conceding the game and pulling Caleb Williams, sending Tyson Bagent out there for the rest of the second half of the fourth quarter, and the crowd is chanting F Ben Johnson. This just can't be anything close to what Ben Johnson envisioned when he saw week two at Detroit on the schedule. And that, to me, goes to like a bigger thing here about his what he expected with Caleb Williams. Because Ben Johnson, when he took this job in January, after turning down all these other jobs, he's telling you flat out, publicly, the quarterback's a big factor in this. He thinks not only with the quarterback, but with the rest of the roster and the cap space and the draft capital, that this is a place that can be competitive right away. And they're only 0-2, but it's pretty hard. It's a pretty hard to watch 0-2. But this is a place that can be competitive right away with the quarterback and the roster that they had the potential to build through free agency in the draft, and that it's a place that can be competitive for the long run because of those things. He's telling you, though, the quarterback's a big factor here. And the jobs that he turned down over the last few years, there was not a great quarterback situation or a clear quarterback situation in those cases. And he had to be expecting better than this. Even at this stage, Patrick, he had to be counting on better than this from someone with Caleb Williams' talent.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who says that Caleb's playing above his talent level hasn't been watching. I mean, there's no argument for that. I think that it must drive him crazy that they came in here this early in the season while everything was still fresh in here. Remember, and you did a great job of writing about this as the week went on, Jason, but this was the best team in the NFC last year. This is the best team in the NFC now hosting their first playoff game or first game since they bombed out of the playoffs. This is a tough spot. Like, I still thought in the moment it made sense that going up against their new coordinators was probably good for the Bears. But this is a hard place to play. And had Caleb put up a good fight and they lost, I think we could all kind of live with that. Had the defense hung on a little longer and they lost, I think we all could have lived with that. But this showed that they're just not in the same weight class as the Lions. And while I don't think even, the most myopic Bears fan thought they were, like, to have it just shoved in your face, 52-21, is just disheartening. And I think I think even in that locker room, boy, how many locker rooms have we seen where you can pinpoint the moment players go, oh my God, we might actually suck? I don't think we're there yet, but boy, this is probably the first day that they'd consider it.
It's scary too because there is so much pressure on next week playing Dallas, who, by the way, Dallas doesn't look as bad as I thought they would through two games. They scored 40 today. They were competitive against the Eagles.
What'd they give up?
It was 40-37, wasn't it, against the Giants? Like that,
yeah.
But they were competitive against the Eagles in week one at Philly. And the pressure of being 0-2 and look who comes to town, old Beardy McHaircut, Matt Eberflus as the defensive coordinator for the Lions. I mean, if you're Ben Johnson, you can and Caleb Williams, you cannot go losing at home to Matt Eberflus, even in week three. But, Pat, what you're talking about the game and, you know, did we figure they were going to lose? Of course. Yeah, they were an underdog in this game. We both, and I think everybody at the Sun-Times, picked them to lose this game. I could tolerate the 0-2, even, losing at home to the Vikings. It's the way that they've gotten there. It's the look of it that's been so problematic. I mean, we're looking right now, as Patrick and I record this, we're sitting at the 50-yard line in Ford Field, and we're looking at a scoreboard that says 52-21. I think if that scoreboard said 52-41, this would be a lot different conversation.
Yeah.
And if we were looking at last week and saying, at week one, and saying, hey, Caleb Williams threw for, you know, 350 yards and was 60-70% completions, it'd be a different conversation even at 0-2. It's the fact that nothing about this looks close to where it should be at this point. Honestly, it looks like unprofessional is not the right word, but it's just totally inadequate.
It's not buttoned up.
I mean, this doesn't look like suitable NFL football.
Here's what does. The first drive of both games looks fantastic. And you can see Ben Johnson can script the start of a game. Everything else beyond that, Jason, has just gotten incrementally worse and worse with every series. I mean, they didn't score a single touchdown on the first drive last year. They've done it now twice in 2 weeks and just degraded from that point. Yeah, from that point on, everything looks worse. Whoever's adjusting on the opposite sideline is adjusting faster and better than the Bears are. And then, like we said...
Well, can I interrupt for a second, though? That's happening, but, I mean, I think the issue that Ben Johnson is running up against is what are his pivots? I mean, if you only have one running back that you can use, you don't have that pivot, and if Caleb Williams is as limited as he has looked in the first two games, you don't have a lot of pivots to make there either.
I think you need an honest game plan. I think that in the second half of this game, it turned into, well, we got to throw every down. I don't think that's beneficial to Caleb. I don't think that's beneficial to you growing your offense. I think you need balance there. And like you said, Swift looked good. The problem is Swift fumbled the football.
Swift was like 5 yards a carry.
Yeah. Yeah, if they do that, I wouldn't pivot at all. I'd stick with it and, you know, hope that you can put Caleb in situations where he's throwing on second and five instead of on third and – did we get to third and 29 or something like that, second and 29?
It was a second and 32 when he threw the interception.
Yeah, which was when you and I couldn't tell whether he was throwing the ball away or trying to throw it to somebody, that's a pretty terrible sign.
He said he was trying to make a play on that interception. It looked like in real time that he was trying to throw it away down the sideline and just didn't aim well enough. He said he was expecting Zacchaeus to cut up the sideline, and instead he broke off the route.
Can we do a little housekeeping thing before we get out of here?
Yeah, please.
It involves a kicker.
Oh, boy. I thought that was solved. I thought the Bears were past all of that.
Friday afternoon, they agreed to bring in Jake Moody, who was a former third-round pick of the 49ers, but in an interesting twist, has been much worse than Cairo Santos has the last couple of years. That was on the heels of Cairo not kicking the ball out of the back of the end zone. At the risk of relitigating that thing, Jason, Cairo kicked...
Re-relitigating.
Cairo kicked off to start the game today and kicked the ball out of bounds.
Oh, what a terrible... I mean, he misses a field goal in week one, and then he has the kickoff snafu at the end when he says, I got this, and then doesn't. And they bring in a practice squad kicker, and then you start the game like that.
Talked to Cairo afterwards. Asked if
what
he
did he say about that?
I asked if he was surprised about them bringing in a practice squad guy, and he kind of said, oh, that's the business. You know, this happens. And, you know, talked about how he was confident in himself and about how, you know, they've done this before. I would argue to you that they did this before during COVID when – if your quarterback started to get – or if your kicker started to get sick, you couldn't get another person on a plane and then into the building on time.
They've never done this before.
No, they haven't.
Cairo Santos.
They haven't challenged him this way.
There has not been any legitimate – they've had maybe an extra kicker in camp at times, but in training camp, but it's never been anything remotely legitimate.
Right. And Ben Johnson, when asked about it today, said essentially this isn't an open competition we believe in Cairo. So I think his very existence is an open, makes it a competition in a way that it wasn't on Friday.
Yes.
But I'm looking at this, Jason, more of as a project for them to see whether Moody can unlock what made him a third round pick. And at his age, he can be the, you know, if he figures it out, he can be the Bears kicker for the next 10 years. But I would caution you, and I think you and I are actually on the same side here, Cairo Santos knowing how to kick a Soldier Field is not something that should be dismissed quickly, easily, or with any with anything but utmost respect, because we've watched the Bears be terrible in their home stadium, and we've watched Cairo Santos in the last 4.5 years tame it. And I think that that is worth every penny they're paying him. And for Soldier Field, I think he's the perfect horse for that course.
Also, I don't think that's something that should be messed with lightly. And they have messed with it this week by bringing in, they're doing something that's getting his attention.
Yeah.
No matter what Ben Johnson says about it publicly, you don't do that for no reason.
Well, and I think it gets
you don't do that with no, you know, thinking, that doesn't mean anything, don't worry about it. Well, and you wonder, like, Cairo Santos is someone whose career was over when they brought him in. And he has rebuilt it and rebuilt his confidence. I mean, Cairo Santos was in just about as bad of a situation as Cody Parkey when his career fizzled out.
I wouldn't go that far.
It wasn't a playoff game, but he's missing field goals left and right, teams are getting him, and he's missing field goals. I mean, Cairo Santos is done.
What was he with the Titans? He missed three or something
four
weird?
Four in a game, I think four it was. Game. And he rebuilds not only his mechanics and his kicking accuracy, but his confidence. Mm-hmm. And then you do something like this.
Yeah.
And I mean, do you not think, like, maybe we should wait before we do anything that might mess with this guy's confidence? And that was the first thing I thought of, Patrick, when he kicks the opening kickoff out of bounds at Ford Field.
He said he was being too aggressive trying to angle the kick that way. With any other team, it wouldn't – I mean, I know, only this team can kick the ball out of bounds right after not being able to kick the ball out of bounds.
People get frustrated with Cairo Santos. The fans do. I understand.
That's the deal.
I get why they do, because he is not you're watching TV and you're seeing guys hit 60-yarders.
Cowboys
did someone hit a 64-yarder?
Cowboys guy did. Yeah. Yep.
So you're seeing that, and you're knowing Cairo can't hit a 64-yarder in a dome, I don't think. But you have to remember, they play in the everyone will tell you this. No one will object to me saying this that knows what they're talking about. They play in the most difficult venue in the entire league to kick in. That is a fact. Also a fact, Cairo Santos is the most accurate kicker in the history of that stadium. I wouldn't mess with that.
I think it's easy, though, if you are a first-time head coach and you have a kicker fail to do a very simple task. By the way, you and I are not dismissing Cairo's inability to kick the ball through the back of the end zone. You have to do that. When the coach says do it, you need to be able to do it.
Or tell him that you can't. I mean, you and I think, are willing to work around that in order for the greater good of Cairo Santos makes the majority of his kicks at Soldier Field.
I do understand, though, if you're a first-time head coach and if you'd like to prove a point to your entire roster, not just your special teams room, that when you screw up, you will be held accountable.
And if mess something up, we're going shopping.
And if all it costs you is a practice squad salary spot, to replace somebody who was hurt on your practice squad and had to be put on IR, maybe that is a small price to pay. Jason, we will pick up the pieces as the Bears continue this week in getting ready for Matt Eberflus and the Dallas Cowboys. Until then, people can follow you and I on social media. They can check us out at the Sun-Times website. And God willing, they can buy a newspaper when they're in town. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.